gave Brian one of the worst moments of his life. He had a great deal of affection and respect for Jack. To see him now, taken prisoner, was a bitter disappointment. For a moment, the thought surged into his mind to shout and encourage the boy to keep his chin up. The white hair was stained with orange dust, matted with sweat. Jack Rhodes slumped in the saddle, holding his shoulders in a peculiar, hunched, tight way. Ryan guessed that his damaged ribs were causing him trouble on the horse. The boy's red eyes glanced up and around the parade ground, passing Strasser, flicking for the smallest splinter of time across Ryan's face, moving incuriously on to the rest of the buildings and uniformed sec men. Jack showed no sign of recognition. Ryan conjectured that if the kid was deliberately pretending not to know him, then he'd come in as part of a setup. Strasser knew Doc, Christie, and J.B., so it had to be either Lori or Jack, which meant it had to be Jack.
What a most bizarre-looking young man. They call them albinos with that white coloring and hair.
Yeah.
Who do you have there, Corporal Lance?
Kid says his name's Jack Loren, General. Last survivor off a wag train the far side of Shea Canyon. Had a run-in with Goldknife and his murdered Apaches. Come looking for us after he stole a horse off one of the bastards. Killed him for it. Wants to join up here at Fort Security.
You wouldn't know the young boy, I suppose, Ryan? No, of course not. Hardly think one skinny kid can be the rescue column, can it? No, of course not. Get our guest washed and cleaned and uniformed, Corporal. Then bring him to us after the noon meal. Before I see him, I want a full briefing from every non-com. I want to discuss the Apaches. I'll see the boy after that. Sergeant McLachlan?
Yes, sir, General.
Take Ryan to the museum. That might interest him. We'll have the mall later. I'll tell you when. Oh, and look after him carefully, Sergeant. No falling downstairs, or I'll have you flogged with my special whip.
With a bleak smile toward Ryan, Strasser marched toward his own quarters. The patrol was dismissed, and Jack was led away by a pair of sec men. He never even looked back at Ryan. The sergeant clapped Ryan on the shoulder.
Oi, you're ready, bucko.
What's so special about the General's special whip?
Cross him and you'll find out, friend. The General's special whip has little slivers of broken glass woven into the plates of wire. One blow opens you like a fist in silk. Five, and it's the infirmary. 10, and you likely die.
Ryan shuffled after the big man toward the rear entrance of Fort Security and the museum that lay behind it. Many of the rooms had been grossly vandalized, something that Ryan guessed had happened before the arrival of Court Strasser in New Mexico. Most of the damage had been cleared and swept up, but there was still broken glass on some exhibits, and many of the dioramas had been damaged. The dangling sign said proudly, "The National Museum of the United States Cavalry, Past, Present, and Future."
Rockfall brought down half the bastard mountain on top of the present and the future. Not that they had too much future back in them days. Blessed Mary knows that things isn't good now, but I'm about telling you that they must have been worse when the skies darkened.
Guess so. So there's only the past left. That's why you've only got the replica blasters here?
Sure, and that's right. Springfield carbines, 1873. Shoots a single 45 round, and if you're inside a barn with a door shut, you got a chance of hitting it. And the sidearms are all, quote, navies. General made us dump any blasters we had for he came. His Tetchkin's the only modern gun in the place.
Springfield and the Colt are good blasters if you use them right.
That they are. And against the Mescalero, we're in good shape. But if we were to come up against another Ville...
Mind if I look around?
Be my guest. Bores the tits off me, it does. There's only this one way in and out, so don't get clever. Wouldn't want you hurt before Rourke gets to grips with you.
A couple of troopers lounged against the wall of the washroom, keeping a careful eye on Jack as he rotated under the shower.
Pale piece of chicken meat, ain't he?
Tender, though.
The trooper unashamedly rubbed his hand against the swelling at the front of his dark blue breeches. Jack didn't say anything, contenting himself with trying to relax under the warm stream of water, feeling the pain easing from his broken ribs.
Gotten a bad knock on your side there, boy. Been fighting a cougar?
Yeah.
Don't talk much, do we?
I like them that way.
Keep their mouths shut?
Not all the time. Need their mouth open some of the time.
Then you close it.
Jack ignored the ribald laughter, making no effort to hide himself from the prying eyes, knowing that it would only give them more ammunition for their filthy comments.
Mouth shut and legs open.
Maybe the general's gonna want first go with this one.
As long as they just kept talking, Jack knew he didn't have anything to worry about. On his own, Ryan was free to walk where he wanted around the single-story rambling building. Gazing on row upon row of uniformed dummies, many in broken cases, quickly became boring. As he wandered by, he read out an occasional card, describing what the battered figures wore. All of them were from the period between about 1860 and 1890. The later sections were buried under the collapsing walls of the Great Mesa above Fort Security.
Brigadier General George Cook, the best Indian fighter in history, seen here wearing his own sky blue version of the cavalry overcoat, lined in crimson, and with a collar made from the pelt of a wolf shot by the general himself. Yeah, sounds about right.
Ryan tried to use the time to figure out what Jack was in the fortress for. Was he there to bring a message, or to wreck the place? On his own, he certainly wasn't there to try to spring Ryan. There was a list of some of the main engagements of the Indian Wars of the period, with a capsule account of each. Ryan glanced through them, passing the minutes, aware that before he could get to speak to Jack, he was going to have to fight Trooper Rourke and play out his part in the small drama directed for him by Court Strasser.
Pyramid Lake, Nevada. Apache Pass, Arizona. Canyon de Chelly, 1864. Adobe Walls. I remember that name. Something about a warrior being knocked off his horse by a Sharp's rifle at a range of a mile.
Don't plan on spending all day there, Bucko. It won't save you from Bully Rourke's tender care.
The diorama showed scenes from some of the famous firefights described on the walls. Little figures, only a couple of inches high, posed stiffly on plastic hillsides among the faded trees and tinsel streams, with tiny puffs of cotton representing powder smoke. Some had fallen over, showing greater losses than had originally been intended. Indians with miniature feathers whooped silently up the coulees of the models. On one of them stood brave Custer, General Yellowhair, in a perfectly modeled buckskin jacket, a pistol in each stumpy fist. At some time in the past century, a fat spider had managed to get into the case and had woven its fragile web across the golden straw that represented the slopes above the Little Bighorn River. Now the spider lay dead, a dried husk, halfway between the trapped general and the equally trapped defense site of Reno and Benteen. Sand Creek, the Haybox Fight, Washita, Slim Buttes, Palo Duro Canyon, Rosebud, Bear Creek, Wounded Knee. Doc had told him something once about Wounded Knee, linking it with Sand Creek. Massacres, he'd called them. Massacres. All of them seemed to be victories for the whites, except for the Custer defeat. But Ryan noticed one other exception. Not listed under battles or campaigns or victories, it was just called the Fetterman Disaster. Ryan stooped to read the faded card, finding a sketchy account of how some soldiers had been lured out of the Bozeman Trail Post of Fort Phil Kearny by Sioux, Cheyenne, and Arapaho.
Treacherously ambushed in a most cowardly manner and butchered by overwhelming force. Slain to the last man, horse, and dog. The bodies of the brave Captain William J. Fetterman and eight of the cavalry's boldest, hideously mutilated.
Ryan glanced at the little plan of the action and a description of what had led up to the disaster, shaking his head at the thought that the brave Captain Fetterman might have guessed he was being suckered into an obvious trap. But if the bait was tempting enough and caution had been buried beneath the fiery charge, then even the wiliest fighter might get cold-cocked into riding, grinning into an ambush. It was a thought to hold.
Sure, and you better be done in there before I come in and drag you out.
Coming, Sergeant.
The museum was a depressing place. Worse than many abandoned redoubts, it had nothing in it of life. Monuments to death and to the oppression of one people by another. If this was what Strasser was seeking to recreate, then Ryan was on the side of the Mescalero, though it was probably too late now to recover from being caught. On the way back to the entrance, he walked along a line of photographs of famous Indian leaders and fighters, staring blank-eyed into the lens of the white man's camera. He knew from old books that some of the Indians feared that the cameras would steal their spirits. The theft had been far, far worse than that. Yellow Wolf, Little Cloud, Victorio, Kicking Bear, Young Man whose enemies are even afraid of his horses, Sitting Bull, Kicking Wolf, Geronimo, Gaul, Red Cloud, Quanah Parker, Cuchillo Oro. Not the war chief who waited back at the rancheria in the canyon, but his famous forebear. Ryan peered at the tinted picture, rubbing at it with his fingers, smearing the film of dust. He was just able to make out the gleaming blur that was the great golden knife that the cuchillo he knew now wore at his belt. Many things had changed, but many of them still remained the same. Strasser was nowhere to be seen when Ryan and Sergeant McLaughlin exited through the broken swing doors of the United States Cavalry Museum. Someone was working hard over at the forge, a hammer singing a merry song on iron. Sparks flew from the bellows, rising into the warm late morning air. Ryan stopped and took a deep breath, savoring the scent of hot metal, horses, and sunshine.
Interesting in there.
A lot of dummies, a lot of models, words and pictures, battles lost and won, massacres, disasters, and firefights. I saw rooms filled with losers, but not many winners.
Best watch it, mister, or I'll give Roth the say-so to rip the muscles off her bones. General's made us proud of what we've done.
Ryan could hardly believe his ears. Was Kortstrasser that good? Good enough to take a murderous rabble of mercenaries and hired guns and make them wear uniforms? And then make them proud of their fictitious past?
And that Sand Creek they mention in there.
What about it?
It wasn't the cavalry, mister.
Then who?
Colorado Volunteers. Vigilantes they were, not regulars.
That make a difference?
Damned right it does. Listen, mister, I got to say, you don't seem a bad sort. Like my grandpa used to say, I like the cut of your jib.
Ryan had never heard the expression before, but he nodded to the non-com. The sudden approach of friendliness didn't surprise him all that much. His guess was that the SecMan had sized him up and seen the possibility that maybe, just maybe, Ryan might beat Rourke. Someone like McLaughlin wouldn't miss a trick when it came to trying to get on the side that was winning. Ryan saw now that the troopers had established a rough ring in front of the forge, setting up posts and stringing ropes between them. Ryan glanced back at the main buildings of Fort Security, hoping to spot Jack, but the windows remained empty. Rourke was already waiting for him, sitting on a small three-legged stool in one corner of the fighting area, with a brace of his cronies to second him. Apart from the stool, the other corner was empty.
Want me to back you, mister?
Yeah, better than nothing, I guess.
There was a momentary delay while McLaughlin looked for the keys to release Ryan from the chains. Once he was free, he rubbed at his arms, bending and straightening the knees, feeling circulation flowing again. Rourke had stripped to the waist, wearing only his dark blue breeches tucked into the high leather boots. Checking him over carefully, Ryan noticed that the sec man still kept the stubby cavalry spurs on the heels of the boots.
Big 80.
Fat's the word. Carrying more spare weight around his gut than a farrowing hog.
Mean son of a bitch, though. Use his weight on you. Try and pin you. Maybe use the spurs. That's the way he fights. Killed a young boy from Ohio only a month ago like that. Tore him up real bad. Lad bled to death.
Why are you telling me all this? You want me to chill the bastard for you, is that it?
He wins. Then he's harder to order around. Might challenge me one day. The general wants him to win, but not chill you. Get the bucko to rough you up some. So I got to bet each way. Kind of bet that I really like.
Rourke raised a meaty fist toward Ryan.
Come on, one eye! What's taking you so long? Got a yeller belly, have you?
Ryan considered making a joke about the size of the sec man's wobbling guts, but he decided that silence was the best reply to the hectoring. He simply continued to ready himself, checking the feel of the ground and where the sunlight fell.
Any rules, McLaughlin?
If you try to leave the ring without being thrown or kicked out, they'll put you back. I'll stop it if Rourke's got you ready to buy the farm. Same if you manage to beat him. General won't want any killing between you.
Any other rules?
Yeah. Do him before he does you.
Jack was feeling better. The shower had eased the pain of the long ride across the desert, and his broken ribs had simmered down to a dull ache. The sec men who'd been ogling him had finally stopped when they saw the pale boy wasn't going to rise to their baiting. He'd been given a full uniform to wear, which fitted him reasonably well, though the pants seemed to have been made for someone a size or two smaller around the hips. The troopers escorted him to